Seattle's Morning News. This is Dave Ross with Colleen O'Brien. How many times have you heard about cases where someone who seems to be clearly guilty gets off because of one or two holdouts on the jury? Brings up the issue, do all jury verdicts in criminal cases have to be unanimous? Let's consult with former State Attorney General Rob McKenna. Where does this case come from, Rob?
This case comes from Louisiana, which for a long time was one of only two states that allow non-unanimous verdicts in felony trials. So that means that juries can reach a verdict by a vote of 10 to 2 or 11 to 1 to convict someone of a felony. So in 2018, the voters of Louisiana amended the state constitution to eliminate non-unanimous verdicts, but it only applies prospectively. In other words, people convicted before January 1st, 2019, or convicted of crimes committed before then, who are like Mr. Ramos, the plaintiff here, are still in prison, can't take advantage of this change in the Louisiana Constitution.
They're not happy about that, are they?
So Mr. Ramos was convicted of murdering a woman back in 2015 by a jury which split 10 to 2. So he's serving a life sentence at hard labor. In Oregon, you still have this this rule in place as well, even though there's been some talk about reforming it. One of the reasons these rules are so controversial is that they're both rooted in bigotry. For example, in Louisiana, they amended the state constitution back in the late 1890s to allow non-unanimous verdicts because they were upset that under the federal constitution, African Americans had to be led onto juries. Mm-hmm. So, allowing a non-unanimous jury is a way to nullify the votes of minorities. Oregon's law also dates back a long ways, I think, to the 1930s, and there's evidence that it also is based in discrimination, particularly anti-Semitism. So neither of these laws exist for reasons we would be very proud of. What's complicating the situation here is this. In 1972, a majority of the Supreme Court of the United States held that federal juries have to be unanimous to convict someone of a felony. Mm-hmm. But one of those five justices filed a concurring opinion saying that only applies to federal juries, not to state juries. And so now the idea of a unanimous jury, which is rooted in the Sixth Amendment to the Constitution, which guarantees everyone an impartial jury, only applies to federal juries and not to state juries because one justice, former Supreme Court Justice Lewis Powell, filed this concurring opinion. That, in turn, has raised this question of whether or not the Supreme Court should honor that precedent. And that is important because of Roe v. Wade. They will have to decide whether they will, continue to be bound by a prior decision of the court.
So if they decide to be bound by a 1972 decision about the number of jurors required for conviction, that would mean they would also decide they are bound by the Roe v. Wade decision?
Well, the two cases aren't connected in any way except this, that both this future abortion case that they're going to be hearing and the case from Louisiana on unanimous juries turn in part on a prior decision of the court.
Right.
So in the law, we have this concept called stare decisis, which means that the courts adhere to precedent. It provides for stability in the system. These judges are all unelected, so we all take comfort in the fact that they're going to be on the bench for life, talking federal judges here, that they're going to honor the precedents of prior judges and not simply toss the law out as soon as they get into the black robes. So, adhering to precedent or stare decisis is really important. That's the connection. And when people who oppose abortion rights argue that Roe v. Wade should be ignored, they're basically saying ignore stare decisis, ignore that precedent. Here, I think we have a much weaker precedent, and I think that's why the court is pretty clearly going to declare that unanimous juries are required for state juries as well as federal juries. They're going to not only invalidate the Oregon law, which is still in place, the Louisiana law having been repealed by the voters, but this is going to call into question the convictions in those states of tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
Who may still be in prison and weren't convicted unanimously.
I heard there's something like 32,000 people. How can the courts possibly handle that many cases?
That's going to be a real challenge. In fact, that was the main argument made by the Louisiana Solicitor General when she argued this case before the Supreme Court. It isn't clear from what I've read why she thinks all 32,000 people could contest their verdicts, like they're all there on a non-unanimous basis. But anyway, that was the number that she used. It didn't seem to be a very persuasive argument. Justice Gorsuch, one of the conservatives, said, quote, you say we should worry about the 32,000 people imprisoned. One might wonder whether we should worry about their interest under the Sixth Amendment as well. You know, and he's right, right? Because the thing is, if you can be convicted of a felony by a non-unanimous jury, it may be that the one or two people who vote to acquit happen to be the same race as you, or happen to be poor like you are. There are a lot of reasons that we want unanimous juries, and we don't want minority views to be, you know, squelched.
Former State Attorney General Rob McKenna. Rob, thank you.
Thanks, Dave.